From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about environmental issues and sustainability. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. This past weekend, I attended the premiere of the new Warren Miller film, Ticket to Ride, down in Salt Lake City. One of the sponsors of the film was the Climate Reality Project, an organization dedicated to educating the public on the impacts of climate change and advocating changes in climate-related policies.
Joining us in the first half of the show will be two local representatives of Al Gore's Climate Reality Project, Mary McIntyre and Mary Closser. They'll talk about CRP's mission, how they became a climate reality leaders, and how you can become one too.
And in the second half of the show, we'll continue the climate change theme and speak with Bernice Notenboom. She is an ex-Colorado River rafting guide turned polar explorer and now host of a new show appearing on the Weather Channel called Tipping Points.
The concept of tipping points means that at a particular moment in time, a small change can have a cascading and long-term consequence on both local and global ecosystems and climate.
For example, the show considers how the thawing of the Siberian permafrost or the melting of the Greenland ice sheet could trigger a cascade of chemical and thermal events on a global scale. All that in the second half of the show.
That's right. We'll also have some news about the most recent release of crude oil from a pipeline in North Dakota. It's not getting a ton of coverage in the press, but at 850,000 gallons, it covered nearly 7 acres and could possibly be the largest land-based release of crude oil in U.S. history. We'll bring you the details.
Of course, you can join in on today's discussion by posting your questions or comments to our Facebook page, KPCW This Green Earth.
The environment and our connections to it. That's This Green Earth, and it all gets started right after these words from our underwriters. Stay tuned.
Donations to Park City's Restore reduce landfill costs for residents and builders and prevents tons of material from entering the waste stream each year. And proceeds from resale of your donated items help fund Habitat for Humanity affordable housing programs in Summit and Wasatch counties. Restore is open Wednesday through Saturday, 10 to 6, and is located in Silver Summit at 6280 Silver Creek Drive. Habitat for Humanity of Summit and Wasatch counties is a nonprofit organization.
Hi, this is Gordon Raymond with Republic Services, your recycling and garbage services provider, and a proud supporter of KPCW. Recycling pickup in Summit County is now every other week. Remember, recycling materials go in your larger blue or brown bin. Gray is for garbage. AlliedWasteUtah.com/Summit County.
Foothill Oriental Rugs has been an underwriter on KPCW for over 20 years. I'm Jim Weber, owner, rug buyer, and Park City resident. As a direct importer since 1985, from traditional to contemporary to tribal, Foothill Oriental Rugs is Utah's complete rug source. Foothill Oriental Rugs is located 2 miles north of the mouth of the canyon in Salt Lake City at 1460 Foothill Drive.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak. She's Nell Larson.
That's right.
And yeah, and like I said in the intro, last week, this past weekend, I attended the world premiere of Warren Miller's 64th film.
I can tell you're a Warren Miller kind of guy, big ski film fan, Chris.
I've seen nearly all of them, at least two of the 64 so far. But at that event, they had, of course, all representatives from different ski makers and other resorts. But also, there was a booth there manned by the Climate Reality Project. And I wanted to learn a little more about who the Climate Reality Project is. So I found some climate reality leaders. Okay, well, we'll explain all of that in a minute. Joining us is Mary McIntyre and Mary Closser, who are climate reality leaders of the Climate Reality Project. Thanks for coming on the show this morning.
Well, thanks for having us.
Okay, yes. Well, let's start with the basics. Give our audience a little explanation about who or what the Climate Reality Project is and what their mission is.
So the Climate Reality Project was founded and is chaired by former Vice President Al Gore back in 2007, mm-hmm. following on his writings with and success with An Inconvenient Truth and taking that effort to a much greater level. And what the organization is dedicated to is empowering and unleashing a global cultural movement demanding action on climate change. And as you mentioned, you know, we're climate leaders. The organization trains climate leaders to engage, present the facts, and empower people and communities to take action on climate change. And
Well, I think Mr. Gore was inspired by grassroots movements from the past. Mm-hmm. Growing up in the South, he was around the whole Martin Luther King movement, and he has a video showing the grassroots movements around that, and also the Berlin Wall coming down.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was, you know, in the past what triggered this, and it also was a follow-up from The Inconvenient Truth, which came out in 2005. And interestingly enough, the Climate Reality Project started in 2007.
Right.
So it's actually been around for several years.
Yeah.
And what kind of projects has it done in the past? Like, what kind of initiatives or advocacy or on-the-ground work has the Climate Reality Project created?
Well, there's been in that, do my math, in the 6 years since the inception, there's been close to 6,000 climate leaders trained worldwide in over 100 countries. There are two training sessions that are held annually, one in the United States and one internationally. This past year, there were training sessions held in Istanbul and then here in the United States in Chicago. Chicago's training, where Mary and I attended and where we met, it was the largest training session to date. There were close to 1,500 climate leaders trained from all 50 states and 70 countries.
Wow.
So, as Mary said, grassroots organization and momentum to really get the word out about what's happening. I mean, this is not something we're debating anymore, at least outside the political arena.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay, so talk a little bit about the training process. How do you become a certified climate reality leader?
You need to attend a training, one of the two trainings. And, of course, Istanbul would have been exciting last summer, but it wasn't in the budget. So it was Chicago. I happened to be going through a bunch of junk mail one night in April, and I, you know, I'm on the climate reality email list, and I opened it up and saw, you know, news about this, become a climate reality leader, and I was up till midnight that night completing my application. I got so excited about it. So you have to go through a training, which is usually 2.5 days and once a year, and then you have commitments to follow through once you're trained.
So before we talk about those commitments, so this is something you can just decide to do personally. You don't need to represent an organization or a cause.
That's correct. Mm. And as Mary said, the application process, it was a rather simple but lengthy. I mean, essays, they want to understand your background, what's your motivation, your commitments, and the audiences that you can reach out to. And then there was, I mean, when I filled mine out in mid-April, it was a good month and a half before we heard you're not automatically accepted into the program.
That's a good point. This is not simply just checking a couple of boxes and sending in a check. You're actually applying be accepted.
Right.
And they review that application, and then
I think
fingers
there were
crossed,
three,
you wait for
it. Exactly. There were three essay questions, and who knows how hard it was to get in, but I think they had more applicants than they knew what to do with this year. So we did have to wait a while to hear back.
And and you guys met there, you said? So you didn't realize that each other were attending. Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
They had the tables broken out by state and country, and so we were at a table with some Oregon folks and Utah folks, and there were four of us there. From Utah.
Yes.
Okay. So you said the training process is 2.5 days. You're just getting trained to become a certified leader. What are some of the topics and subjects you're learning about?
Well, everything from effective communication skills, collaboration strategies, social media strategies,
Storytelling,
uh-huh. Right down to the training on the presentation itself that we're given a PowerPoint presentation of over 350 slides that, and then
that's quite a presentation.
It's quite a presentation. I mean, the idea being that we're going to be speaking to a variety of different audiences, so that we retool and edit as appropriate to the different audiences, whether it's to an educational group, whether it's a group of students, whether it's a community group or a chamber group.
Okay. So hopefully something less than 350 slides you'll be using.
Yes.
Yeah. 4 hours later.
Just to warn people. Still.
Yes.
Yes. You'll have a condensed version.
It's comforting to have all those slides, though, because we really can pick and choose for our different audiences.
And did you get training on the science of climate change?
Yes.
We did get the science. I mean, that came through in the slides. And mm-hmm. he had two head scientists in the country there. And that was pretty exciting. And I'll have to say, I was riding the bus to the hotel one day, and I was just, you know, chatting away with this kind of elderly gentleman. And then the next day, Al Gore shows up at 8 o'clock to start the day. And sure enough, that was one of the two head scientists he had there on stage with Al Gore all day.
Right.
So, and I got to chat with that man on the bus, so I was pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
Right. And these scientists were Dr. Michael McCracken, who is mm-hmm. The chief scientist for climate change programs at the Climate Institute. And then Dr. Henry Pollack, who's an emeritus professor of geophysics at the University of Michigan.
A lot of credibility.
A lot
yes,
of credibility.
Powerhouse scientists
yes.
there. Yeah.
A lot of integrity. That's
yes.
important. Because not only, I'm sure you learn not only just the science, but then you also have to learn how to handle those that are skeptics.
Exactly.
Field the skeptics
right.
and the deniers out there,
that's
right?
That's a lot.
Another
of,
part of your communication.
We discuss
skills.
That a lot at the training, the deniers, and
yeah.
how to be delicate with all audiences.
Well, engaging rather than being on the defensive.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Armed with facts.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Science.
Facts wins the day. Okay, so you went through this process, and then you received your certification. That congratulations, you're now climate reality leaders. What are then your obligations going forward?
Would you like to start,
you come
Mary?
Back.
Sure.
What do you do?
Sure. Well, as part of that, even before we arrived in Chicago, we had to sign an agreement committing to at least 10 what they term acts of leadership over the course of the next 12 months. And those acts of leadership can take different forms, from presentations, interviews, editorials, blogging. It's all about communicating and educating different types of groups and communities about climate change.
Like this.
Like this.
This is an act of
This is an
leadership.
Act of leadership. Yeah. Mary had an article recently in the Park Record, an editorial. Mm-hmm. That's another example of an act of leadership.
Okay.
We're presenting at the Utah Society for Environmental Education's annual conference next week, doing a presentation on taking action on climate change. So that's just the beginning.
Sure.
I mean, speaking,
there's a number of different ways to educate. Yeah. Okay.
Terry Underwood, another climate leader from a year ago, she was the co-writer for this last editorial in the Park Record. She and I will do a series of articles over the next 6 months on different topics relating to climate change. She is a nutritionist, and we'll be talking about sustainable agriculture in relation to climate change. And then we have a few presentations planned for the Women's Anthenium Group here in Park City, and also the Lunch and Learn at the Mark in February. We'll be doing that and hoping to reach out to the Rotary Clubs and newcomers. And
all right.
So I have to ask, when you guys went into this and you sent in your application, did you have an idea of the kinds of things you wanted to follow up with? Or was it just kind of like, I want to go to this training, I feel inspired to be part of this group, and I'll figure out the details later?
I had an idea. And they asked, and they want to be sure you have a sense of that. I mean, that was, as I recall, part of the application process.
Okay.
You know, describe some of the types of audiences you'll reach out to and organizations you're involved with, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had a good sense of what I wanted
what
to do.
What you wanted to do.
Oh, yeah. I just knew that I wanted to do more. And the training was great because it gave me ideas of what these could be, more, what more meant.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well, if you just join us, you're listening to This Green Earth, and we're speaking with Mary McIntyre and Mary Closser, who are climate reality leaders as part of the Climate Reality Project, talking about what the project is all about and how they become leaders. I want to know why. Let's talk a little bit of take comments. Why did you guys want to do this? You know, what motivated you?
Well, let's see. For me, I have been doing environmental work for a while, and it's mostly been with alternative transportation and waste management, mm-hmm. and I wanted to branch out. In the last year or two, I've wanted to do more, and I've been reading a lot, and you know, I've learned that this climate crisis is real, and I wanted to get more broad.
Mm-hmm.
So when I saw this email come through about becoming a leader, I thought that's just a perfect fit for me right now, and I do love to communicate in different ways, and I believe in grassroots, and so it just felt like the right thing at the right time.
Mm-hmm. Good segue.
Right, and similarly, for me, the last decade, both my professional and personal endeavors have focused on environmental and sustainability issues,
mm-hmm.
And part of it was wanting and the desire to reach out to a larger community. And on a personal level, I had a student who went through this program a year ago, was a climate leader, came back to our school to speak to middle school and high school students, absolutely inspiring
right.
to me. You know, and for me, I looked at him and thought, this is, I want to do more. I have an effect here in my school environment, but I want to do more and reach out to a larger audience.
How inspiring to see a student do that. So that makes me want to ask a question. What variety of people were at this conference? Was it young to old?
Huge variety, yes.
That was the big surprise, I think, for both of us. We talked about that a lot. We were expecting a lot of younger people, but I would say half the audience were, you know, 60 and above.
So really?
Yes.
I think it's a great thing for people when they retire looking for something to do. And
sure.
They're getting educated themselves and, you know, grassroots. It's a perfect thing, perfect fit.
Do you have any idea when the next training session occurs?
They'll be next summer in 2014.
Okay.
They typically take place, this training this last year was in June in Turkey and then the end of July in Chicago. So they okay. haven't yet announced
right.
Where the next venues will be.
But it's sometime next summer at this
yes.
point. Okay, so we'll give people the website in a couple minutes so what they can check out. So how many other CRLs are in this area? You said Terry Underwood.
We have four CRLs from this summer, and then there are three or four I have found from other parts of Utah, two or three in Salt Lake. So we have a good, you know, 7 to 9 people in Utah,
okay.
and we could use more.
Right. That's certainly true, and hopefully maybe this little conversation will motivate some people to look into that. So let's take the last few minutes talking about your upcoming events. Again, you said you're giving a talk at Utah Society for Environmental Education.
Education, right. You had Carolyn on the show last week
mm-hmm.
talking about the show, or talking about the general conference.
Okay.
So we'll be speaking on Saturday morning, the 26th.
Okay.
And with that talk, Mary and I are putting that talk together right now, and one of her focuses is going to be how you can become more involved with Utah. One of my weaknesses is getting out, since I have kids, and actually doing things, going to rallies, writing letters to politicians, and how can you get more involved as an individual? And so she'll be focusing more on that, mm-hmm. Utah specific, and then I will be focusing more on behavior change and how so many of us talk about how we're an environmentalist, we do all these things, but when it comes down to it, do we really?
Mm-hmm.
And how do we really change? What is the tipping point to get us to change?
Those both sound like fantastic topics because I think a lot of times we do talk in like these vague terms and, oh, I support this or that, but very few of us are actively involved in, you know,
sure.
engaging the government of Utah,
right.
or
what
our representatives.
Does it mean?
Yeah. What does it mean and how do we do that? And how do I actually apply it in my
sure.
own life?
How do I consume coal, oil, and natural gas?
Yeah.
In what different ways? And now what am I going to do to reduce that consumption?
Yeah.
On a personal or a family or a business level, actions like that.
Well, and people have different comfort levels for how they want to get involved. So part of, as Mary said, presenting different ways for people to get involved, some who want to do more advocacy work, some that want to work more behind the scenes.
Right. Yeah, there's action, there's advocacy, mm-hmm. and there's education. You guys are doing all three.
Well, we're we have our strengths
and
weaknesses.
Yes,
we are.
We're trying.
You're
yes.
doing it all.
And I have to say one more thing. Mary and I both have kids, and that's another draw for me getting into this is because we do want to be models for our children.
Perfect.
So, absolutely.
That's a great example. Now, you guys were at the Warren Miller Film down in Salt Lake City. Do you have plans to be at the film this weekend at the Eccles Center?
Yes, the Climate Reality Project will be there. The I Am Pro Snow Group will be there. There'll be three showings, one on Friday and then two on Saturday evening. And there's a segment in the Warren Miller film this year, in the first half of the film, that's focused on Greenland. And Ted Ligety, who, our local
we know him.
Resident and hero, he, along with three other skiers, were down in Greenland skiing the terrain and witnessing and talking about firsthand the effects of climate change on the glaciers there in Greenland.
Right.
So
climate change is even making it into the ski
right,
films.
Right.
Now.
It's a good partnership with Warren Miller Entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's great.
So let's go through some of the contact information. First, Climate Reality Project itself, the website
is climaterealityproject.org.
Simple enough.
And they have videos and all sorts of good information on that website.
Yes,
to get
they
updated
do.
It's
on a good, very informative website. And if people want to get in touch with the two of you to learn more about that or give a presentation.
Right, our personal email addresses, which mine is Mary McIntyre, MCINTYRE, 1121 at gmail.com. Because it couldn't be easy, right?
Yeah. And another Mary. I am M-A, as in Mary Ann Closser, C-L-O-S-S-E-R, at gmail.com. However, I also work with Recycle Utah. I do environmental education there in our schools. So you can always reach me with Enza at Recycle Utah.
Okay.
That's great. And we can post those on our Facebook page as a reference, if that's okay with you guys.
Yes,
absolutely.
That's fine.
Fantastic.
Right. Anything else? I think we hit everything.
I think so.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us. And we'll have to follow up on your UC talks.
Absolutely.
We'll update that. I plan to attend one of those talks. I plan to attend their talk Saturday morning. So
perfect.
I'll give you a rundown the next Tuesday. So Mary McIntyre, Mary Closser from the Climate Reality Project, thank you so much for taking the time to come and talk to us.
And for getting trained as climate reality leaders.
We need
thank you
more.
For having
thank
us.
You. Okay. Yes, we need more.
That's it. We'll leave it at that. Let's take a break for some underwriters. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Bernice Notenboom from the Weather Channel's new show, The Tipping Point. It's This Green Earth. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Gordon Raymond at Republic Services, a proud sponsor of KPCW. Gray is for garbage. Those four words will help you remember the current waste and recycling program. Your blue or brown bin is for recyclables. Gray is for garbage. AlliedWasteUtah.com/Summit County.
This is Matt Mitten, a state planning attorney with Jones Waldo, a Park City law firm. Longtime supporters of KPCW, we've been providing clients legal services since silver and not snow drove the Park City economy. Our website is joneswaldo.com and our number is 435-200-0085.
Hi, this is Steve Roney with Prudential Utah Real Estate, a proud supporter of KPCW. With more than 100 sales associates and 14 gallery or ski-in offices in Park City, Prudential Utah can help you with your residential or commercial real estate needs. More information at pru-utah.com or with the Prudential Utah mobile search app.
Join us for The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch, Wednesdays at 9 a.m.
From going gluten-free to finding your balance.
From bike position to relationship alignment.
From the educational journey to navigating wellness.
That's Wednesdays at 9 a.m. on The Mountain Life, only in Park City, only on KPCW.
Brought to you by Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Stein Erickson Lodge and Spa, Park City Clinic, and Grand Valley Bank.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson, and I'm here with Chris Cherniak, as always. And we just spoke to Mary McIntyre and Mary Closser of the Climate Reality Project about their experience training with Al Gore.
That's right. They did. They spent... He went through all 347 slides.
Million slides.
They said, she said it was from about 8 a.m. to almost 10 p.m.
Wow.
That, okay.
That is a
saturation.
Rigorous training schedule.
That is one semester's worth of
that them. Is okay. Commitment as well.
On but the... they are committed. And good for that. And I'm looking forward to their talks.
That's right. And it sounds like, you know, they're interested in getting involved in different groups around town. So if you're interested, you can email them and we'll post that contact information after the show.
All right.
So we're waiting for our second guest.
And speaking of which, going on around town, we have some calendar events things we can talk about while we wait for our next guest to call in.
That's right. We've got Recycle Utah, which Mary also just mentioned. Oh, has an upcoming event, the Household Hazardous Waste Collection at the Canyons. And that's on the 12th. That already happened.
And we're going to get to that when we have time.
We're going to recap that, and then we're going to talk about their upcoming dumpster days.
Okay, their dumpster days. But?
But in the meantime.
In the meantime, let's turn our attention to a new show on the Weather Channel called Tipping Points. It's this show explores, let's just say there are places on Earth in a near crisis state due to climate change. And Tipping Points, a new television series, explores these areas and the chain reaction that could occur if any one of them should cross the tipping point. This is a series that premieres this Saturday, October 9th, on the Weather Channel. And joining us is the host of the Tipping Point. Bernice Notenbaum, she's an explorer, journalist, was a Colorado River rafting guy. We'll get to that in a little bit because she lived down in Moab. Bernice, thanks so much for joining Nell and me on This Green Earth.
All right. Is that a good connection?
Yes. We hear you just fine. Let's keep our fingers crossed because I think you're calling us from...
Tell us where you're calling from.
Yeah.
From Amsterdam, from the Netherlands.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Oh, my. I have no idea what even day it is in Amsterdam compared to what time. But thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us. First, let's start with, tell us a little bit about what the Tipping Point is all about.
Yeah, well, it's science. It's a science show, really. Mm-hmm. But science shows can be extremely boring.
Right.
So what we were trying to do was to try to take science that is new and upcoming and a bit nerve-wracking, and to try to portray it in a way that people could really understand what is going, what are the new things that we need to be concerned about with climate change. And this is not our little, you know, script that we wrote for a TV series. This is real science. It's Tim Lenton, who is a scientist from the University of Exeter in the UK. And he actually calculated, it's all math, it's all, you know, really science beyond my ability. Mm-hmm. But he calculated that there are 12 places in our climate system that are kind of getting in distress at the moment if we continue with our CO2 emissions. And what that means is that if the air temperature increases with 1 or 2 degrees or even 3 or 4, as well as the ocean water, that's something that we not think of often. Mm-hmm. Then systems are going to get a little vulnerable and disrupt, and potentially move into a stage of what we call tipping.
Right.
And if that happens, then it's irreversible. Then we will no longer get that climate system back the way it was.
Okay.
And he identified 12. Some of them are really hard to film, you know, things that happen in the air. Atmospheric changes are difficult to film, as well as things in water. So we went to the places that we could actually visually see climate change in action and what scientists are doing to measure the state of the climate.
It's absolutely tough to visualize climate change, I think. So I think that's a great goal for this show. And what I'm wondering is, you know, where did the idea for this show come from? Is this something that you pitched to the Weather Channel? Were they looking for somebody to cover this? How did it all come together?
Yeah, we pitched it. Well, I'm not new to climate change television. I've done a few documentary films. And my whole thing was, because I am an adventurer and I wanted to show the seriousness of the issues, particularly in areas that people don't readily can go to, you know, like the poles or Everest or places that are not like the average destination. That's where things are really starting to that's where the areas are really starting to fall apart, particularly, of course, on the polar regions in the Arctic and Antarctic. I mean, it's real simple. There is ice or there is no ice. It's either or.
Right.
And I did that for many, many years. And then after that, I actually did a big kayak trip in Mali to see what is happening with the rainy seasons, if they can get rain or if that is also a wild card. And so it's compounded from these experiences. And then I met with a Australian producer, and she had this idea to do Tipping Points. And this was at the time, you know, just a few years ago. Nobody wanted to hear about the climate. Not that it has changed, but we found a way to really bring the topic back in the living room, if you will, and with adventure, with extreme science, very active, beautiful places, and kind of like easy science. You know, we explain it, we show it, we explain it again. Mm-hmm. So you really get it at the end of the show, and that's been successful. We just aired it here in the Netherlands. That we went through a screening, and we had record numbers of viewers. We didn't expect it. We thought, oh, it's another climate show. Maybe people can hear the gloom and doom scenarios. But people came back afterwards and says, we really love it's big. It's nature. It's kind of like the BBC Planet Earth series. But then there's scientists hopping around instead of animals.
Right. That obviously it has to be a challenge. You don't want to present a story that is so gloom and doom. And it has a tendency, this subject has a tendency to be alarmist in nature. So you don't want to be alarmist and gloomy, but at the same time, you want to present the reality of the situation and do it in a science-based way, right?
Yeah, well, it is. We're not offering solutions. People are criticizing us about that. But the thing is, you have an hour or 15 minutes of airtime, and in the U.S., even, you know, less with commercials all the time. Mm-hmm. So really, an episode is 40 minutes, and if you then only can spend 30 minutes of your time explaining what's going on, and then the rest you have to switch gears and offer solutions, that just doesn't work. It's better just to tell the whole story, give the entire picture, because it's so complicated. These tipping points are all interconnected, and if one goes, the next will go. It's like a domino game.
Right.
And you know, it's hard to explain even visually to if the polar ice cap melts, that means something for the people that live in Australia. I mean, you need a whole hour just for that to explain. So we kind of opted, that was our choice, not to do too many, you know, not to do solutions. It's on the website, and it's you know, we know what the solutions are,
yeah,
honestly.
You're right.
Mm-hmm.
They are obvious.
Then maybe that's the next series anyway. But Bernice, we're curious to hear about your background. You know, we read that you are a polar explorer and an author and a Colorado River guide. And how does that turn into, you know, hosting this show for the Weather Channel? Tell us about a little bit more about your background.
Yeah, I used to live in Moab, Utah. I lived there for a long time, 12 years. And then I had a rafting business there, which I sold in 2007, and then I moved up to Canada. Well, I already lived in Canada, but I moved permanently in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very fond of Utah and the environment, and I still come there many times. It was through that, you know, through exploration and having a company that take people to wild and stunning places that is sort of interested in in these, how climate was going to how climate change was going to have an impact on the places that I visit and for my clients. That was my first kind of concern. But really, for me, when I left Utah, I started doing really big expeditions. You know, like a traverse of the South Pole from the coast and across Siberia in the winter on skis, and you know, that kinds of things. And it was in 2007 on a North Pole expedition that I really was in shock because the weather was so bad. It was and the ice was bad. It was wind, and the ice was all in motion. Nobody could leave. Nobody could go anywhere. We were in a science camp at 88 degrees of latitude, and we were all stuck. And that was the perfect opportunity as a journalist to talk to disgruntled travelers with all these scientists. And I got to learn so much about it. And then I thought, all right, well, I need to really see these places for myself. So in 1 year, I traveled to the North Pole, South Pole, Siberia, and I crossed the Greenland ice cap, and I wrote a book about it. And just to sort of get a feel for what really is happening and how fast it's changing. So it's not completely from the Utah desert to the polar ice cap. I'm sure, you know, my love for nature and my love for environmental issues truly did begin in Utah. Wow. When I lived in Moab, there was nothing. There were no hotels. There was one little restaurant. And when I come back now, it's a very different place.
Oh, it's a very different place now. But it's still beautiful and it's still inspiring. If you just joined us, we were listening to This Green Earth, and we're speaking with Bernice Notenbaum. She's a explorer, journalist, author, Colorado river rafting guide in a previous life, and now the host of the new television show Tipping Points. It premieres this Saturday, October 19th, on the Weather Channel. And, you know, one way to maybe explain what a tipping point is in nature is to think about water itself as it goes from a liquid to a solid. You know, water temperature drops. It gets colder and colder and colder slowly until it reaches one particular temperature, 32 degrees, where everything changes and it crystallizes. It goes from a liquid to a solid. And that's an example of a tipping point with respect to a liquid like that. And this is in this case, we're looking at tipping points in nature on a much larger, you know, biological and chemical scale. Like you say, Bernice, things that could change in the Arctic or the Greenland ice sheet may ultimately have an effects on our weather and our climate conditions here in Utah, you know, globally, of course. And these are the examples. What tipping point gives you the greatest pause, concerns you the most after, you know, learning about all these 12 that you say that you cover?
Yeah, the biggest one that I'm really concerned about is the Great Southern Ocean. Hmm. It's that's the ocean that is surrounding Antarctica for a couple of reasons. It's really difficult to do research. It's expensive. It's and I don't know if you ever have been in Antarctica. It's not a place. If you travel by boat, it's you really have to have an iron stomach. The seas are so wild. Nobody really want to spend a lot of time there. You just want to cross it and go back. So for a ship to be exactly in that area where the Southern Atlantic Ocean goes into this really rough sea, is difficult to do any kind of research in there. So those are the things that scientists are having to deal with. For the other thing is most of our ocean research is on the Northern Hemisphere. Mm. There's very few universities on the Southern Hemisphere. I can think of maybe in Cape Town or some other place in South Africa, and in Australia and a little bit in South America, where really there are good scientists that want to know what's going on with climate change in the ocean. And so we are really having to catch up there. The research in the Southern Oceans only started in the late 50s, so that's not a very long time. So statistically, we have not a whole lot of evidence or comparison material. Then the second problem that they have, and I'm telling you what the problem is with the Southern Ocean, they now found that that ocean is the biggest, most important ocean for the world, truly, to absorb CO2, because this is dense, cold, and salty water. And that is that composition of these three components you need to have in order to absorb as much CO2 as you can. Well, what they're noticing now is that the ocean is getting less dense, and it's getting less salty and warmer. So it's losing all of the three abilities to really take up as much CO2. And oceans in the world take 42% of CO2, gets absorbed by oceans. And so if we're losing that unbelievable mechanism of oceans absorbing CO2, particularly the ones around Antarctica, that is really nerve-wracking, because they are so slow to react.
Right.
It's like molasses. I mean, things are set into motion, and that's the other common thing, characteristic of tipping points. It takes a very, very, very long time, and things are not obvious to the naked eye, but at some point, it is just enough. You know, it's the drop in the bucket, and then it can no longer absorb any more CO2, and then what they fear is that it starts releasing CO2 back into the atmosphere, and that's what they're starting to see at this area, at this place around Antarctica. Now, why is it getting less salty and warmer? Well, warmer, you know, oceans are warming faster now than the atmosphere. That was the conclusion of the latest IPCC report.
Mm-hmm.
The oceans are truly a degree, if what, not 1.2 degree warmer. And they think it's just because there's so much more melt going on in Antarctica. More glaciers are melting, creating more fresh water,
right?
More cloud forming.
Greater dilution going on of the salt water.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting point, Bernice, that tipping points aren't easily quantified. I use my example of water turning to ice. I mean, that's easily quantified. 32 degrees.
Right.
Done.
We don't really know where these tipping points lie.
We don't know whether the tipping point lies at 400 parts per million of carbon dioxide or 470 parts per million, or even if there is a single concentration. It could be a combination of concentration of carbon dioxide and temperature and other elements. So that's the challenge in trying to educate people on the importance of this, and that's what your show is going to tackle.
Yeah, well, I mean, and the other thing, the permafrost, for instance, it's well known now that if the Earth warms up 4 degrees, we won't manage 2 degrees. Forget it. It's not possible.
Mm-hmm.
3 degrees, well, hopefully, but then we really have to kick into gear tomorrow, all of us, the whole world. But 4 degrees is more likely. That's the scenario we're looking at. And that is disastrous, for instance, for the permafrost. And in the permafrost that is now nicely frozen, you know, it's all rotten roots and leaves and twigs and whatnot. But we don't know that there is even more complicated story, because once it's thawed, if it comes into contact with air, it's CO2. If it comes into contact with water, it will release methane.
Yes.
And we don't know. It's either or. And, that was the other shaking effect for me, flying over with NASA. We were invited in their plane, and they were measuring the CO2 and methane release. It's daunting how big that area is. And NASA only does Alaska, and they're already getting numbers off the chart now. And we have no idea what's going on in Canada. We don't know what's going on in Russia. I mean, Russia has 90% permafrost.
Ah.
If you pile it all up together, that is a real time bomb ticking in. And then, of course, that will trickle down to so many of these other tipping points.
Well, you can learn about that and much, much more on Tipping Points, the new show premiering on the Weather Channel. Saturday, October 19th.
And Bernice, that's a series of 12, is that right?
No, of 6.
Of 6.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And where can people go to learn? Obviously, they can go to the Weather Channel website. How about learning more about what you do, Bernice?
Well, they can type in my name and they can see my personal website.
Perfect.
Although it is, it's mostly in Dutch, just because I can't. I am trying to work on the English side. Well, it's just that this series airs in 15 countries, and all I do is speaking to media. You know, is one we just finished with one country, and now it's the next, and so I haven't had time really to update it. But if people want to learn more about the series and more about me, honestly, they can just go to the tippingpoints.com website, okay. And they will get it there as well.
Perfect.
Fantastic.
We look forward to the show and want to thank you again for taking the time to talk to us from all the way from Amsterdam, Bernice Notenbaum. Thanks again for joining us, host of the Tipping Points, and we'll be in touch. Because we'll be tracking these tipping points, and if we got questions, you're the first person we're going to call. So, thanks so much, Bernice.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye bye. Let's take a break for a couple underwriters, and when we come back, we'll continue our little climate related issues. This one's about oil.
That's right. We need to talk about the latest oil spill and then a few local calendar of events, some environmental events happening around town.
Perfect. It's This Green Earth. We'll be back right after this.
I'm John Wells.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peake.
Join us for Cool Science Radio Thursday morning at 9 when our guest will be Clive Thompson, author of Smarter Than You Think. Is technology changing our lives for worse or for better? His answers may surprise you.
Then Daniel Lieberman with his new book, The Story of the Human Body, Evolution, Health, and Disease. To continue our phenomenal run as a species, it's essential to understand our evolutionary legacy.
Cool Science Radio.
Brought to you by 350 Main and the Spur Bar and Grill.
Hi, this is Gordon Raymond with Republic Services, your recycling and garbage services provider, and a proud supporter of KPCW. Recycling pickup in Summit County is now every other week. Remember, recycling materials go in your larger blue or brown bin. Gray is for garbage. AlliedWasteUtah.com/Summit County.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, weekly talk show on environmental issues. Connect our connections to and impacts upon the environment, concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak. She's Nell Larson. We've got a few minutes to talk about this most recent release. I like to call it release.
it's such a nice term, a release of oil.
It's a little more engineering type. Because I think of an oil spill as like ships rupturing and, and all in one big, event. Moment, all of their cargo is spilled. This is more of a release that occurred of an oil pipeline. All right,
I disagree on the release term. My eyes are rolling. Yeah,
all right.
I like spill. But anyway, so this most recent release happened in North Dakota, and this was on land, as we mentioned, which has been somewhat unusual for these spills. It released over 800,000 gallons of crude oil.
And we suspect that's on the low end because that's from the pipeline owner, Tesoro.
That's right. So that's equivalent to 20,000 barrels, if you think in barrels.
Doing the math.
Exactly. And in these other cases, like Chris has mentioned, we've always seen these estimates slowly increase in the days after the spill or release of oil. So
and this was from a 6-inch diameter pipe conveying crude oil from the Bakken Shale. This is American crude oil running south, I think, to a larger port. Where it was going to be conveyed and combined in other lines. But anyway, there was a quarter-sized hole that formed in this pipeline. Right now, the conjecture is that this was due to corrosion, just general wear. This pipeline was 20 years old, and it began releasing oil sometime. No one quite knows when the release occurred because it wasn't found out until a farmer who's pipeline this crosses was out
his property
was out harvesting his wheat and first smelled oil, and then he smelled it for days until he realized that his tractor was getting bogged down. his tires were spinning in oil. Yeah. And then he finally alerted the authorities. They came and are now in the process of cleaning up this spill, which Nell, you said covers roughly 7 acres. There's actually some good photos, aerial photos. You can go online and see the size of this this release. It's huge.
The photos, especially as you see them progress from the initial spill to, you know, all of this groundwork being done, they're pretty impressive. They're pretty surprising.
So
another aspect of this that's being reported on is that the spill was kept private sort of secret for a long time. So, you know, day one, the farmer spotted the leak. He told Tesoro. Then the next day, Tesoro told the state. And then only 11 days after that was it released to the public. So it's like almost 2 weeks.
Before the public found out.
Before the public found out.
Tesoro says that they thought it was much smaller. They thought it was only a few hundred barrels, et cetera.
Right.
They had no idea the magnitude of this. This thing had to be releasing oil for days. And that's the – and, you know, let's put this in context now. The XL – this is a 6-inch pipeline. The XL pipeline is going to be 36 inches, six times, okay? So it's going to be conveying, roughly 15,000 gallons of oil per minute. And that's Canadian tar sands that the XL pipeline is going to – not Bakken crude, which is a different – totally different type of –
substance.
Substance, thank you. So this is just putting this in context and that, you know – Tesoro says they monitor the line, they look for pressure drops, they do aerial flyovers of this line, and they didn't see it. They did not, they never saw it.
Hard to detect.
Hard to detect. And that's the problem with these pipelines that are so remote. You can go for days before they get detected, and then by then, you have hundreds of thousands of gallons of oil that are on the ground and now will eventually reach the water table. And once it reaches the water table, the effort involved to clean it up is even more so. So this is didn't get a lot of play.
Despite the fact it was 3 to 4 times bigger than the Mayflower, Arkansas spill that we covered, several months ago?
7 months ago, which is also another story. And that story continues.
And we could talk about this all day.
Maybe next week.
But we have to wrap up.
So let's take a last underwriters. We'll be back to wrap up. It's This Green Earth.
Foothill Oriental Rugs has been an underwriter on KPCW for over 20 years. I'm Jim Weber, owner, rug buyer, and Park City resident. As a direct importer since 1985, from traditional to contemporary to tribal, Foothill Oriental Rugs is Utah's complete rug source. Foothill Oriental Rugs is located 2 miles north of the mouth of the canyon in Salt Lake City at 1460 Foothill Drive.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longreimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Park City Nursery. For 30 years, we know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com. VaultHomeLoans.com. Purchase and refinance mortgages. Conventional FHA and VA. 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
You are listening to This Green Earth. It's the end of another week's show on KPCW, and we'd like to thank our underwriters, including Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough,
Republic Services,
Habitat for Humanity's Restore,
Rocky Mountain Power,
San Francisco Design,
and Prudential Utah Real Estate.
And as always, you can find us on Facebook at KPCW This Green Earth.
Hey, again, this is KPCW 91.9 FM Park City. You're listening to KPCW Park City.